Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with a Dish. I'm John Katsalamidis. I write the Cats Report for Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas Weekly, LasVegasSun.com, LasVegasWeekly.com, and all of the titles in Greenspun Media Group. And joining us from our vaunted Montana outlet in or around Kalispell in an undisclosed location is Tricia McCrone. How you doing, Dishy?
I'm good. I think, you know, as they say, I found the perfect way to get rid of your holiday pounds. Just get the flu.
That's quite a diet plan. You've been under the weather and have delayed your return to Las Vegas, sadly.
Yes.
Sad
I've never missed a. I've never just missed a flight. Like, I literally, you know, was sick through it.
I was sick through a flight on Allegiant not long ago, too, but I made that flight. Well, how's it going up there? How is everything in the Newton clan? What can you impart?
Everything is great. Everybody, you know, well, actually, no. Well, I mean, we all, in one shape or another, have gotten this flu during these last few weeks. So, knocking on wood, I don't even want to jinx myself, but it seems like everybody's back on the upswing. I think we'll just say that. So that's good. It is so beautiful here. The snow, this the most beautiful falling snow. I tried to videotape it, but it just doesn't show up as well as it just really is. It's just this beautiful, like, snowflake, so thick, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Although
I've been, you know, pretty much in bed in pajamas for the last 4 days. So
you
I just
know
look
this
out
from,
my window.
You know this from watching the local news.
Yeah, I know this from just looking out my window watching the snowfall. And
well, very good. It's room temperature in Las Vegas. I can tell you that it's beautiful outside today, and you know we're scooting through the new year.
I can't believe it's already, you know, like, what is it, the 8th or something of the 9th?
It's the week of the of that, yeah, the 10th.
Somewhere around there. 12th. It's true. By the time this airs, it'll be like, I don't know, the 12th or something.
It'll be Valentine's Day. I have to ask you, since we last spoke, there's been a change in our reality show, Sin City Rules, your reality show, you and Alicia Jacobs. It's been taken off the air in the United States, pretty much canceled as we term it. How do you feel? Are you relieved?
You know, I guess
distressed,
it doesn't.
Happy.
I don't really have much of a thought on it because I wasn't a cast member. You know what I mean? I mean, I was just
absolutely.
Kind of. I showed up a lot because of my friendship with Alicia, and you know, I was kind of like, as Lana called me, the barking chihuahua.
Lana Fuchs.
Alicia,
the breakout star, Lana Fuchs.
Yes. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I do have to tell you though, that it was very, very funny. I guess because I worked in television for so long, but sitting watching the episode with my family and with Alicia where, you know, we're called Thing One, Thing Two. I'm called the Skank. I'm called all of these things by Barking Chihuahua, Cheerleader, you know, all these things. And I swear, I had to laugh. I did not take any of it personally. Like, I just thought it was
really?
The funniest thing.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's a good attitude to have. That was the one thing about the show that was always a concern, was that reputations can get damaged, feelings can get fractured and all that kind of thing. So if you come out of it unscathed, then you're unscathed,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, yeah, I mean, come on, she, like, had met me once or whatever, and it's, you know, and was hurling those things at me, which I thought it was funny because I considered the source.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I am in a dress up to my neck, and you're calling me a skank with, you know, you're throwing everything that you have out there for the world to see. I kind of thought it was funny. I mean, I did. I found it amusing. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I do believe, you know, I think that I know, and Alicia has said this, so I'm not talking a term, but I did feel that it didn't represent the true women of Las Vegas.
Is that a surprise to anybody?
You know
that
what?
It didn't. I think that was a concern from the beginning when people saw
yes,
the cast.
Yes, it was. But I think that was a lot in. I have to say that was a lot in the casting because I mean, you look at Beverly Hills. I mean, those women may not have been household names, but they do represent the lifestyle of Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a problem for people. You know, as you know, in Las Vegas was how the show was represented, and in talking to some people around the city who were of influence. They really felt offended by the depiction of this cast in that way.
Yes.
And I think it was a show that a lot of people didn't root for right away. And but yes. I have to ask you, you know, you were in, you know, even peripherally involved in it. Would you do it again, knowing now what you knew coming in?
It would depend. It would depend. The one thing that I will say is that the cast was not known to each other until they already were signed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you could say, oh, you know what I mean? Like, so it was like you literally found out who everybody was. You had no idea who everybody was. Again, I wasn't on the cast, but I know this from a good source, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But, but I would think it would depend. I mean, obviously, it would depend on the people involved. I think that Evolution Media is an incredible organization, an incredible company. I mean, they have very, very successful shows, successful franchises, and you know, I think TLC wanted to kind of get in on the Bravo thing, and you know, and I just feel that, you know, in this circumstance, had it have been a different cast, I think that I really do think it could have been a hit.
Right.
I do.
Well, it was an interesting five show run here, and you can still see the rest
of it. I guess,
see it online on the TLC website. We have got to get to our guest now. Joining us momentarily is one of our favorite guests, Zoe Boy founder Chris Phillips, and his significant other, the great violinist Lydia Ansel, to talk about their new, hopefully, strip show. So stick around. I know we will.
Viva! Viva! Hey, this is Lon Bronson of the Lon Bronson All-Star Band. I'm here with Cats with the Dish.
Yeah! If we succeed, nobody will ever know what we've done. No medals. No promotion, but I'm here to tell you there's death in it, waiting for the man who hesitates. Right now, our only advantage is that he won't know who we are. So I have only one rule in this outfit. Leave these at home. We're not solving a case here. We're going to war.
That's Josh Brolin as Sergeant John O'Mara in Gangster Squad, director Ruben Fleischer's stylized, ultra-violent version of the historical crime epic. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. Although loosely inspired by true events, Gangster Squad is more of a cartoon than a history lesson, about as close to the reality of organized crime in the 1940s as a Dick Tracy comic strip. The Squad is basically the 1940s version of the Expendables, engaging in extreme violence with virtually no consequences. The real story of the LAPD's war against notorious gangster Mickey Cohen might make for an interesting crime drama, but Gangster Squad offers up a slick, empty bloodbath instead. I give Gangster Squad 2 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Academy Awards frontrunner Zero Dark Thirty, an effective dramatization of the hunt for Osama bin Laden from The Hurt Locker director Kathryn Bigelow. Pundits on both the left and the right have attacked Bigelow's tense, unsentimental drama, which shows how effective she and screenwriter Mark Bowl are at letting events speak for themselves, regardless of what they say. In the tradition of movies like All the President's Men and Zodiac, Zero Dark Thirty builds a gripping thriller out of the tiniest details. I give Zero Dark Thirty 4 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and online at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting in our studio now is a man who can be best described as forever bronzed and ever gyrating. He has a new plan to bring a vintage Vegas show to the Strip. We're going to talk all about that and meet his significant other, violinist Lydia Ansel. Welcome back to Cats with a Dish. Zoe Boy, Chris Phillips.
Well, John, I commend you on being able to get me out of bed this early in the morning, especially after the ruckus that
both of
ensued
you.
Last evening.
Thank you for coming in. As we record, it's the day after a barn burner of a show at Bally's at a place called Windows. We refer to it. It's Windows Showroom. Is that the name of the?
I like to
room
think
there?
Of it as the Zoe Bowie Social Club.
The Zoe
really.
Bowie
with
Social
Windows. With Windows.
The social media club. There are windows and chandeliers. And last night, or this week, as we record, Chris Phillips joining us this morning, and Lydia. We're part of a showcase that was outstanding and late running. It was you and a 20-piece band led by David Perico. Lydia and the Bell Electric Strings performed the terrific violin ensemble, And it got off at about 11:30 and lasted until about 1:30 in the morning.
Well, hence the name. Late night. It's called Zoe Bowie and Friends, Late Night Las Vegas.
Late Night Las Vegas. Typically, when would the show start? 10:30.
Well, right? When it? Anybody has ever been to a Zoe Bowie show, they know that if it is billed to start at 10, that usually means around 11:30.
Okay. Let's describe.
I'm consistent in that way.
That is to be accounted for. You're never late to a Zoe Bowie show. Let's describe what happened here. You have David Perico, the band leader, in his Pop Evolution outfit, which is a lot of the guys who play in Lon Bronson's All-Star Band. You got the Gossy Horns guys are in there.
Yep.
Andrew Friedlander and Isaac Tubb and them. Tom DeLibro on trumpet. Lon Bronson on trumpet. That kind of force, some of the best musicians in the city up there with you. What is going to be the end result of this particular show?
You know, when I originally came out here about 7 years ago, as you may know, I had kind of an agenda and a mission to, you know, keep that old Vegas-style entertainment alive. And to me, that not only implies, but it almost requires to have the type of musical background that I used to hear when I would come here in the 70s and 80s, where these artists would come out with these full orchestras, and half the show was this monstrous wall of sound that would hit you. And, you know, back then it only required a spotlight and a cocktail on the entertainer it's that kind of thing. But I'm by far the weakest link in that chain up there, obviously, because there's, as you point out, some of the most incredible musicians in town that come together and I think and hope have a great time doing something that we all enjoy. And that's playing the music that's kind of like the soundtrack to the city, which is the old vintage Vegas standards. And you really can't, in my opinion, do that type of show unless you have that giant horn section and you know, all the components that make that type of show happen. And so they take pity on me, and you know, they come down for a six-pack of Hams beer. And
you can't be the weakest link. Six-pack of Hams beer. It's a party ball, you know. It can't be the weakest link if you're the front man in this show.
Oh, you any situation.
You are the key component to this whole thing. You're out there in the tux. You're the Bobby Darin of this.
Oh, I love
you're
that.
You're the Dean Martin of this. I mean, that's where you're presenting. That's how you're going after this. We had last night, and Dish wasn't there, but Dish, you should have seen the lineup of singers we had. We had Paul Shortino came out and sang. Mm-hmm. We had our friend Dishy, Vince Neil, came up. And saying,
"Wow! Oh my
God! What did
he
sing with you? Shout at the devil, or what the hell was that?"
Yeah, you know, I've been a big fan of Vince Neil for many years, of course, and to have him up on stage with me singing the Sinatra classic "Fly Me to the Moon" quite a treat. Mm-hmm. And
but we had a number of great female vocalists. The new group BBR was up there with Savannah Smith and Tara Paulsha.
Tara, I love Tara.
Was in that group was all together, and also Ann Barr's the other member of that group. And
they all did solos as well.
Yeah,
which were
and they all duetted with you. Nieve Malandra,
who's the most current singer in the Zoe Bowie Top 40 show that I did.
Right, and she is. But is she the one who sings at Marche Baku?
Yes,
out in Summerlin. So the point of all this is you have a lot of moving parts up there in that stage. And is this gonna be
so true?
And then the Bell Electric Strings performed separately and together.
Well, there's
the show you're gonna bring.
Well,
to
you
the
know, there's
stage,
a consistent right? theme with both of my shows. You know, and this was no exception, where I act more as, I guess you might say, the host of the evening, where I occasionally sing a couple songs. Kind of like a Merv Griffin, really, or John Davidson. He comes out, sings a song. And then they bring out the talent, see? And that's kind of...
the John Davidson. You should have a
John
picture.
Davidson,
you
oh
remember,
my God.
Wait, did
John
I just date
Davidson?
Myself?
Did he do like Ripley's Believe It or Not or something, too?
It was incredible. What was that? Real Incredible? Real People? Did he host that?
That's incredible.
And Saturday Night Live made fun of that show by calling it Real Incredible People. And they had somebody doing in person. John Davidson, cheeky. Wow. The dimply, toothy, multifaceted show host. And that's who you're in.
No, but you know what? I like to create a forum where people can revel in the kind of vintage Vegas vibe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to start off the the night by singing a couple songs, and then I like to turn it over to people who can really sing.
Oh, come on, Chris, you're incredible.
This faux modesty is bracing to me.
No, but that, I mean that sincerely. It's I like to create a environment where people can treat my stage as their stage, and I like to interact with the audience, and why not include them up on stage with me if they're there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now, is that lineup going to be the same every week, or is it going to be a rotating lineup? How's that going to work?
Well, we're hoping that the show
is there going to be an every week.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of an experiment last night. As usual, I bit off more than I can chew with the production, and it was kind of a throwing a party in my backyard and hiring a band, inviting all my friends is kind of what it felt like. And I think it was very successful. We had a great turnout. It was a beautiful room, but it was not an environment that was intended for the type of party that we threw. So in essence, it was kind of like throwing a corporate party where you have to bring everything in, from the production to the band, to the risers, to the seats, to the candles, to every little detail.
It's basically myself. It's a shell of a room.
Yes.
It's the home of Tony and Tina's wedding.
That's correct. In there.
And Amazing Jonathan was in this room.
He was, surely.
Yeah. Yes. And he had a hard landing and left there. And were you paying attention to that deal?
You know what?
Because
he left abruptly
and didn't like the deal he was in.
That's what I understand. And lucky for me, there was a vacant spot after 9 o'clock that they're hoping and intending that we could produce something for them that would make sense. But to the overwhelming nature of and the size, the complexity of what I had to create last night, I think it might be a little tough and challenging to make that happen, not only on a weekly but certainly not a nightly basis.
It might be
something more like a every month kind of an event, because there was a lot that went into that. And on my level, we don't exactly have $1 million budget for marketing and campaign to get the word out. So
you'd have
purely
lease,
done by social media.
You have to lease the room, right? To do this? Would you have to be...
Essentially, they're leasing the room to the people who produce Tony and Tina's, and they're the ones who...
You sublease it from them?
To some degree, I think. Okay. That's how that would work. And, I'm not the kind of guy that typically is known for selling tickets, but more so selling a lot of alcohol. That's been my business, in all sincerity. That's how I've made a living in town, is that I've never sold a ticket, but we sell a lot of booze.
No, that's true. I laugh, but that is right. That the bar take at your show, I'm sure, is very high.
It is.
Yeah, because it's a good time.
It's a social
show.
Environment,
exactly.
Not necessarily a show. And so that's how we become attractive to casinos. And then they like the fact that we get 200 to 300 people liquored up and in a frenzy and sent them out into the casino where they really do some damage.
The judgment-impaired potential gamblers.
Yes,
that's
true.
What this city was built on. And entertainment, but the judgment-impaired gamblers is literally what the city was built on.
That's how Red Rock got so much of my money, Chris. It's all your fault. I never paid for a drink because you always bought my drinks. The man did I lose at the casino.
They have a chandelier named after you, Dish.
Yeah.
But Lydia, let's turn to you for just one moment here. Uh-oh. How did you get involved in with Chris? First of all, you showed up on the scene. I remember meeting you, and now you're in the act. You guys are together. Walk us through the process.
The shorter story is that Chris and I met at Gordy Brown's birthday party, and Chris just kind of came right up to me and was like, "Hi, I'm Chris." So
is that what he said?
Pretty much. Yeah,
you've probably heard of me. That's usually what he says. Hi, you've probably heard of me. I'm Chris Phillips.
You know, he didn't, but ironically, yes. I was like, you look a little familiar to me. And I was brand new, maybe here for 2 months or so. And so Chris was
You probably know of me from my coverage. I'm Chris Phillips.
Well, he was like, he was all modest about it.
That other blonde around town? That's me. It's one and the same.
Oh.
Lily, like, was the necklace. He dancing?
Was
I need
he
to
dancing
know, was he
also?
Dancing while he was saying that? Was he dancing?
You know, I wish he was, but at that point...
I always wish he was dancing.
Me too. But he seemed familiar to me, not because I was so new in town that I didn't know about his billboards. And it was because we're both from Arizona, and I actually saw his band perform once at Barcelona before they had closed down.
And that's in Scottsdale?
That is in Scottsdale. That's where we got our start. That's where Station Casinos actually
found us. That's
where
they found you guys. That was
because it was a very successful thing we had going on out there.
And you guys have still gone back.
We still do. Yeah.
To Scottsdale.
Just recently, actually. Yeah. We started going back to Scottsdale and rekindling a friendship with our friends and fans out there. Yes.
Good.
So that night, Chris invited me to come down to the show and play a song, and silly me being all naive, I believed him and showed up.
It was kind of a funny story because I was in kind of kidding.
Have you heard her play before?
No, I met this. Here's this attractive, delightful young lady with this incredible energy that I saw across the room, and it was like something out of a romantic comedy.
Aww.
Where, truth be told, I was there on another date.
Yeah.
And I saw this girl, and I was like, hold on one second, I got to go say hello to. So I went across the room and I said, hi, I'm Chris. Who are you, essentially? And within a few minutes, we sparked up this this chemistry that I could tell was something that was going to last beyond that party. And I said, hey, I'm doing a show tonight. Why don't you come down with your violin and get up on stage and play with me? And I thought, yeah, because there's nothing that says hip hop like a violin.
It's right in the mix of that hip hop.
And lo and behold, I'm now doing my show 2 hours later, and in walks this girl with her violin case. And I was like, oh, dear God, how do I make this one?
And you had not, again, you had not heard her play.
I just
at
met
all.
Her that night. I had no, and she jumped right up there with this fearless attitude. And in all sincerity, we have seen each other every single night since then, and moved in to my house 2 months ago.
Wow. We both moved into his house.
I was wondering when he was going to move into his house.
I am so glad that this is a time where you are not going to like give me some crazy answer when I expect a certain relationship status from you, and you leave me dumbfounded. I am very glad to know that you are very happy and that you have the lovely Lydia there with you.
Aww,
well, thank you. We've been very happy. The only thing that's uncomfortable is I have two of my ex-girlfriends living in the next bedroom over. But that's another story.
But they are ex-girlfriends.
But at least they can cook, because neither one of us can.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not true, is it?
Well, we do have one cooking as a neighbor, but but she can't cook, so it's okay.
All right. I get how that works. And how'd you end up with the Bella Electric Strings? You just
I actually
to Nina
had
about that?
I was visiting Vegas a couple times and just kind of trying to figure out what direction I wanted to go next. And Nina's name is pretty solid in Vegas. And someone was like, as a electric violinist, and you know, I had a few YouTube videos of just playing similar type of styles of the non-classical rock, whatever. Mm-hmm. And someone was like, if you want to play in Vegas, Nina is the person that you need to meet. So I met with her and I auditioned for her.
Mm-hmm.
And lucky me, she started to hire me for Bella Strings, and I got to know her, and she is amazing, and I love her.
Yeah. Nina DiGregorio, we're talking about. She's
absolutely
the lead of Bella Electric Strings,
and
she's
the
played
owner,
for everybody.
Arranger.
Yeah, the founder. She's played with everybody. You know, David
she toured
Foster.
With Wayne Newton.
Toured with the Wayner.
and has
been front and center with David Foster during his specials that have recorded at Mandalay Bay. Or at MGM Grand, rather. So that's that project is alone. Is
that
worth
was paying my rent until Chris did.
Well, you know, and to be honest, Lydia, you know, has only been here for a couple months, but now she is the regular violinist for Rod Stewart when he comes to town and does his residency over at the Coliseum.
Well, I'm lucky that they asked me again to play.
Terrific. Yep.
Enrique Iglesias, John Legend, all these people that you've been performing with lately. And so it's a real honor for her to take a few steps down to perform with Zoe Bowie on weekends.
Well, in the context of Zoe Bowie, I mean, we're going to have a rotating group of vocalists continually until you settle on somebody? Is that how
I believe so. You know, because I had been performing with Marley Taylor for 12 years. We did about almost 3,000 shows. And then that just came to an end abruptly a couple months ago when she kind of got sick of Vegas, married my bass player, and moved to Arizona.
Up and left with the bass player. I want to ask you about this, Chris. We've had a lot. And Lydia's coming in at the tail end of a long history we have with Chris over the years since he got to Las Vegas. And I had talked to you actually before you came to Vegas on the phone and had learned about you guys, you and Marley. And we've had a lot of fun, you know, talking about the personal, you know, trials, tribulations, travails of Zoe Bowie. But I have to ask, you know, Marley was It was not often, it would be fair to say, easy to deal with in the context of Zoe Bowie in Las Vegas. I mean, there was a lot of turbulent,
you know, to
in
be
and
honest,
out time.
Not really.
I think, is that even right to say?
She was so lovely to follow me out here so I could pursue my little Vegas dream of being this, Vegas cat, this Vegas entertainer kind of character. And so she was a little reluctant to come out here 7 years ago, but she did. And then I think after being here during, you know, the last couple months, she kind of got tired of Vegas in general. And so she still has family and her roots back in Arizona. And I think it just came to a time where she decided this is enough of that. And so bless her heart, she's doing her thing, and she's now performing out there. And I wish her well. And if it wasn't for her, I would have never made it out here. I owe a tremendous amount of my success to her. But but now I've got about 10 or 12 new young little songbirds that I rotate in and out of my show like 4 or 5 a night. And it's worked out very well for the show, and the audience loves it, and I'm having a ball, and you know, it's
a
nice
party backstage, it's and so on stage boy. Just kind of leaks
we
on.
I know, we saw you guys. Right. We were back there the other night, holy cow. But I ask that Chris, but because you think that you promoted the act, Zoe Boy were essentially you two when you got here. We understood that to be you.
Right.
Collectively. And then she, you know, Marley goes back and goes back to Arizona. What is Zoe Boy now? We're referring to you as Chris Phillips independently more and more now, and Zoe Boy is a general act instead of you individually.
I guess it's more of a brand I've been calling myself Zoe Boy for years now, even long before I met Marley. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a joke that I started calling myself that when I had some friends in an early 80s novelty band that had a singer that took ill, and they asked if I'd like to come and fill in. So I pretended to be David Bowie's kid, Zoe Bowie, and then that was 16 years ago
when you got here.
And the name stuck, and I started my own band, and then of course the novelty and the reference to David Bowie completely fell by the wayside within weeks. But the name stuck, and now I'm out here doing something that has nothing to do with him whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But I can't get rid of this darn name. So mm-hmm.
Well, my favorite is when
putting it on billboards doesn't help.
My favorite is when the tourists come up to you and you're like, Zowie Bowie, and I'm like, yes.
Zowie Wowie.
Yeah, right?
With all that talk about you and Marley and you guys in that period, I just want to ask one thing. Did it compromise your you as an artist and you as a performer a little bit, all the attention on you as a couple, do you think? Would it have been better just to be you and come here and have your vision and have not all the personal stuff going on?
Well, the only real personal issues we had was simply when we separated as a couple approximately three years ago. Mm-hmm. But we never missed a beat. We never missed a show. And, you know, other than the fact that she no longer had lived with me at that time,
right.
That was essentially the only drama we went through. A lot of people made a lot bigger deal out of it than it really was. Mm-hmm. But it was meant to happen. And we were, you know, towards the end of our relationship, we were more like brother and sister business partners than anything. Right. And so really allowed me
to... Didn't she miss a show, though? It was kind of a big show, and that's what kind of sparked all the craziness?
You know, I don't think she wasn't tended to be out here and to be in that limelight. I think she's much more comfortable being at home back in Arizona and doing something a little more low-key. And, you know, she went out to pasture.
You and David are still together, so that's very important that you and David are still together.
You and David is the important.
Yeah, the person that, you know, she essentially shacked up with 3 years ago has now, you know, been my friend through the whole thing and continues to be my conductor and dear friend.
We
talked to David about this as well, so you know.
Yeah, he loved that question. But your dream is still to bring a vintage vibe Vegas big band show to the Strip, and
yes,
it's been that way for almost 7 years.
I have spoken that gospel. Mm-hmm. That was absolutely my intention of coming out here, is to create some kind of not necessarily a show as so much as an environment where people can go and not only hear what Vegas is supposed to be like, but more importantly, feel and see and get a sense of the attitude that was so prevalent back, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s when I used to come here, that's kind of gone these days.
Yeah.
So it's about the environment as much as the show itself.
I firmly believe, and what we saw last night was that.
Yeah, I think we accomplished it.
Bonkers, man. And I'm behind that. What you guys do are great. I love what Dave does. I love what Lon Bronson does. Oh, you can name check Santa Fe, Frankie, all those guys. What Goss does at the Gossy Room, where you bring live music. Especially if there's horns involved.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Man, it's a good thing.
Yeah, we had a 9-piece horn section.
It was
huge.
Really, really cool. So, we got to wrap it up now. But you're still out at Rock Sounds on Fridays.
Red Rock on Fridays. Mm-hmm. We typically do Saturday nights out at the Fremont Street Experience.
Oh, right.
Doing concerts out there.
Third Street Stage.
Yes.
Catch them there. And, keep us posted on everything. And one day we'll talk about some sort of this reality show thing. Hearing so much about, I guess, it's this big secret.
Oh, yeah.
But I thank you both for coming in. And we'll talk again
soon. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's always a delight, John.